The Long Noise Podcast. Electronic Frontier Foundation. The Long Noise Podcast. Electronic Frontier Foundation.
Welcome to the Electronic Frontier Foundation's Line Noise Podcast. My name's Hugh D'Andrati. I'm a designer activist here at EFF, and I'm speaking in our special brand new podcast studio with Corinne McSherry, who is a staff attorney here at EFF. We're going to talk today about the Orphan Works legislation that is under consideration in Congress right now. Some of you might remember Orphan Works from back in 2006. It was a bill that had a lot of support and then some opposition. And now it's back with some changes. It's now called the H.R. 5889 or the S-2913, the Sean Bentley Orphan Works legislation of 2008. So Congress is revisiting this now, and the version of this bill has some changes to it. But I would want to start by asking you, Corinne, about this act. Why are we messing with copyright? Some people in opposition to this bill are calling this the biggest change to copyright since 1976. And critics say it could really jeopardize some people's livelihoods. In any case, there might be some unintended consequences. So what's the purpose behind the bill? What's the driving force?
This legislation is trying to answer a problem that more and more people have become aware of over the past few years, this increasing consciousness of a basic problem, which is that there's lots of great creative work out there that folks would like to use in new ways, but they can't use it, or they feel they can't use it because they can't find the copyright holder. They believe that it might be copyrighted, and they'd be perfectly happy to license it, but they can't find the copyright holder, and so they're afraid to use it because they're afraid that down the line, the copyright holder will pop up and they'll get hit with an infringement claim because they've used this work without permission. So one of the effects of that is, for example, Carnegie Mellon has said that it's 22% of the works that it has in its archive, they can't find the copyright holder. They'd like to make that full archive available for people to look at on the web, for example, but they feel like they can't display it because they can't get permission from the copyright holder. So that's a real shame. Or you can have photographs, historical photographs from the American West, or historical photographs from important moments in American history, such as the decline of the farm. Maybe you'd have a photograph of here was what a farm looked like in 1932, Depression era photographs. It'd be wonderful for documentary filmmakers, for example, or people doing books or other kinds of creative works, to be able to use those photos, and they'd like to, but again, they're afraid to because they can't find the copyright holder, so they can't get permission. So it's basically, we've got this fantastic material, this fantastic resource that's just not getting used out of fear. And the Orphan Works legislation, these works, we call them Orphan Works because we can't find their parents. This legislation is to try to fix that problem and make everybody feel comfortable about using these works while also retaining some power for the copyright holders if they do show up, if they do find out that a work that they're claiming has been used, give them some recourse to still, you know, bring an action while also making sure that there's a right balance between using the work and getting it out there, and maintaining the rights of the copyright holders to either stop use of the work or get a reasonable fee for use of the work.
Okay, so can you tell me who's supporting this bill? You mentioned Carnegie Mellon. What other types of institutions or businesses are interested in this?
There's a pretty broad coalition of folks supporting the bill at this point. There's libraries, of course, are big supporters of the bill. The Copyright Office supports the bill. And many different public interest organizations, such as Public Knowledge, support the bill. Also, universities, academic institutions, as you'd expect. But also, the RIAA supports the bill.
The RIAA is Recording Industry Association of America?
Of America. And Google supports the bill. So there's a pretty, you know, broad range of folks have come together to say, this is a good idea. Let's fix this problem.
Okay.
And here's how to do it.
So that's who's for it. Now let's talk a little bit about who's against it. You know, this has come to my attention because in addition to being a staff designer here at EFF, I'm also an artist and an illustrator, and I'm not a member of the Illustrator Partnership of America, but I receive their emails, and, you know, they've been really bombarding their memberships with a lot of messages with raising concerns about this legislation. And so I've been receiving those and hearing a lot of, it's not just the IPA, but other artists organizations, photography organizations are coming out against this bill. And they're raising a lot of concerns. They're saying that it's going to jeopardize people's livelihoods. For an example, let's say that, I am an artist, and currently anything that I create is automatically copyrighted, and I don't have to take any action. When I create that thing, it's automatically copyrighted for life plus 70 years. And if this bill becomes law, is that going to change? I mean, I think people are worried that that's going to change.
That doesn't change at all.
All right.
So the categorically, no. You still have copyright in any work that you create. That's not changing one bit. All that's changing is that some works that were created in the past or could be created in the future, if a copyright holder can't be found after a diligent search, a real search, there are provisions to make it possible for that work to be used. And again, also provisions for an artist, if they do find their works being used, to obtain reasonable compensation for that work.
Okay.
For that use.
Well, that question of reasonable compensation, I understand that's one of the concerns that groups like the IPA have with this legislation, is that under the current system, if somebody uses my work without my permission, I can go after them and demand that they pay me reasonable fees, but also damages, and that this creates a very powerful disincentive for people not to steal my work. And that if we remove that disincentive, we may be opening the floodgates to infringement. And that might not be a big deal to the big guns, the Disneys and the Pixars of the world. But for the small artists such as myself who don't typically have lawyers on retainer, then it could be detrimental to us.
Well, let me unpack that a little bit, because I do think that's a real fear. And it's fair, but actually I think unwarranted. Right now, it is true. There are statutory damages clauses in the Copyright Act that are actually quite terrifying, and they're part of why the orphan works legislation is needed so much. Right now, you can get up to $150,000 per work in statutory damages. That's pretty scary for a documentary filmmaker, for example, who doesn't have a lot of money. So there is this scary effect of and that big club that copyright holders have right now. Under the Orphan Works legislation, it's true that those damages would not be available, but only under certain circumstances. In order to qualify for this Orphan Works defense, if you were sued, you would have to show that you had made a diligent search, that you had tried to find the copyright holder, and you had been unable to do so. So it's not that all of a sudden you can't sue for damages. If you've got a work, if you're a copyright holder and you've got a work and you're reasonably findable, you've got all the same rights you had before. Nothing changes. And if someone doesn't make a diligent search for you, doesn't make a diligent search for the copyright holder, then all of the standard copyright penalties will apply to them. So that doesn't change at all. The only thing that changes is that if you make a reasonable search for the copyright holder and you can't find them, you've got a safe harbor. You've got some protection that you didn't have before.
Okay, so it's this concept of a safe harbor for people that might want to use works that are of uncertain origin.
Yeah, and keep in mind that this helps artists as well, as I think it's been phrased as just hurting artists.
Okay,
but actually,
unpack that for me. How does it help artists?
I mean, you're an artist, I'm not, so you would know better than I. But it seems to me that there are lots of artists out there who might like to actually make use of orphan works, and now they'll be able to. Artists that also don't have a lot of money, and so they can't afford to take risks. Now they'll have a safe harbor if they, you know, invest the time and energy, and in some cases it's going to take some money, in trying to track down a copyright holder. They can feel safe using works in new and creative ways. So if you're the kind of artist that likes to, you know, make use of old photos or old music, etc., that's going to be possible for you to do now in a way that wasn't before. And I would also point out, finally, that might be why the American Society of Media Photographers is now supporting the bill. So not all of the visual artists out there, which I think are the most concerned group about this, are against the bill.
Okay. One of the questions that is flagged for me is this question of a diligent search.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that the bill specifies that a diligent search must be undertaken, but does it define what constitutes a diligent search?
Well, what the bill says, the current language, I believe, is that it has to be, quote, a qualifying search. Well, what's that? It means, among other things, you have to make a diligent effort. And again, what's that? Understandably, people feel a little frustrated. That feels a little ambiguous. What the plan is that the Copyright Office will issue a statement of best practices, which will set out the parameters for the search, which may vary somewhat depending on the kind of work you're talking about, how old is the work, what kind of information is available or not. There is some ambiguity there, some flexibility there. But that actually is not a bad thing, because if you think about it, this is something you want to adapt over time. And it may be that over time, new mechanisms become available that make searching easier. And you want to have a situation where that's where the best practices are responding to that.
That's true. I'm thinking that with the new advent of this kind of facial recognition software that Google is bringing forward that's called Picasa, at some point something like that might be available for visual works, so that you could get computers to understand the imprint of a particular visual image, and it might be easier to search a database for them that way.
For example, that's exactly right. And again, one of the things we've surely learned over the past 10 years is technology moves faster than anyone anticipates, and things come up that you never would have thought of. So it's important that that be part of it, you build in some flexibility to allow for those kinds of developments.
What about the question of a reasonable fee? Is that defined, or is that also left ambiguous in the bill?
What it is, as it currently stands, is what would a willing buyer and a willing seller pay before the work was used? Now, that's some protection for the user, because say you use a work in some new work, and the new work actually becomes really popular, then it sort of seems like, oh, well, now it all is more valuable. So that's not really the fair standard. The standard it should be is evaluating it before the new work is created. And, reasonable fee, what would a willing buyer and a willing seller pay? Well, that's just kind of sensible. That's the market. So you have to, there's some ambiguity there. You're going to have to imagine what the market is, but it shouldn't be too difficult to sort of see what's the going rate for comparable works at a given time. Then you establish your reasonable fee. But you can't come up with something in advance that would be perfect, because it may be that some works you might have determined would be exceedingly valuable, and other works really weren't that valuable, not that many people would use them. So I think you have to have that flexibility built in with respect to the fee.
Okay. Well, let's move on to the question of the private registries or databases or whatever you would like to call them that this bill calls for. Now, does it mandate the creation of these? And is this going to be a government-run database, or is this going to be something that's going to be done by some unnamed private business?
As it's currently envisioned, the government will need to certify private databases. So basically, the government's going to be outsourcing this to the private sector. For good and ill, they're going to be outsourcing it. And
that might not be the... That sounds like likely Google.
Could be anybody. Okay. We don't know who it's going to be. And the idea, though, isn't that you will be mandated to put your works in this database. I mean, the database idea is really supposed to help particularly visual artists who are worried about a situation where, well, who's keeping track of my work and how do I make sure that my work isn't exploited? If I don't make it available, how is it going to get matched? How will I know? So the database sort of is a repository that you can go to. And one of the issues that people have raised is, well, is it going to cost money to deposit into this database? And I think that that's a fair issue. And I think the best way to manage this is for the database to be free. I think it should be free to deposit your work in the database, because basically it's effectively a government database. And so, that will encourage people to be more comfortable about putting their works in the database if it's free. Now, that's not the way the law currently stands, but I think that that would be a great thing.
Okay. So
it should also be free to access.
Right. Well, from my perspective, the idea of going back and registering my work for all the thousands of pieces I've made over my course of my artistic career is somewhat daunting. And I think a lot of people would see this as a burden on their businesses, to not just going forward, but also going backwards over the thousands of pieces that we've all made, and the different iterations of different pieces. It's actually countless.
Right. But remember, you don't have to do that. And it doesn't mean that just because the searcher, the hypothetical user, still has to do a reasonably diligent search, right? So they still have to look for the copyright holder. So if your back catalog of art has you reasonably associated with it, in some way that makes you findable, they still have the obligation to try to find you. That doesn't change.
Okay. That addresses one of the other concerns I was going to raise, which is that I know that the IPA has been saying that if you don't register your stuff, it's automatically orphaned. So that if anything you don't put into this registry, whether it's charged for or not, whether it's run by the government or run by Google or some other corporation, that if you don't put it into that database, it's orphaned, it's up for grabs, anybody can use it without any fear of infringement cases being brought against them. And so you're saying that's not the case.
That's not the case. And I think that most visual artists for a long time have been, you know, do attach their name to their works. So I think that, you know, all the work that you've already been doing and had to do to protect your and enforce your copyright in your work, none of that is changing. It's only if you have, you might want to look through your back catalog and think about whether, you know, there might be stuff out there that isn't attached to your name. But that's different from, you know, being obligated to load everything into a database.
Well, it's been really stimulating conversation, and it's also interesting to hear the other side of the story and to find that the people that are promoting this bill are doing so from a perspective of trying to increase the public's access to the cultural wealth that we all share.
I think that's exactly right. Don't be afraid of change. This is change. This is one piece of copyright legislation that I actually think really will help stimulate new creative work and grow the public commons of culture and knowledge in a really effective and efficient way. I realize that many artists have concerns. I hope that they educate themselves as much as they can about this bill. And I think once they do, they will see that this actually can help grow art and not stand in the way of artists' rights.
Thanks, Corinne. I think we really hit all sides of that issue. I'd really like to encourage listeners to educate themselves further, and you can find out more from the links that you can find at eff.org/linenoise. You'll find links to sources of additional information, and you can keep up on this issue and keep checking back for future editions of the Line Noise podcast. We're going to be doing these more regularly here at EFF, and we hope you check back soon. Thanks.
The Line Noise Podcast. Electronic Frontier Foundation. The Line Noise Podcast.
Electronic Frontier Foundation.